New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
1-2 on the season, and Brock Purdy may not practice today. That could be a big deal as we head into a massive, massive game against the New England Patriots. We'll talk about that and more on today's show, brought to you by BetUS Sportsbook and Casino. What is good, everybody? Welcome to Stats and Cone on the Gold Standard and the Fans First Sports Network. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera. He's Grant Cone. Once again, live from Levi's Stadium, Grant. You live there at this point? Are you sleeping there?
I got here about a half an hour ago, and my name wasn't on the list. They looked at me like, who are you? I'm like, I'm here every day, but I made it. I made it. Shout out to Rick, the security guy.
Maybe there's a little subliminal messaging there by the 49ers.
Maybe.
Like that. It's like that Jets clip from Hard Knocks where the guy tries to use his ID to get in and it just doesn't work.
It's me every day.
Right. It's me. I've been here every day. How long have you been covering the 49ers for?
Since 2011.
Oh, damn.
Since Harbaugh's first year, since I was 23.
Does it make you feel old now that like the Harbaugh era guys like Delaney and people like that are up for the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. I mean, Frank Gore's kid is in the league. Patrick Willis has gray hair. It's very, very strange. When I started covering the team, all the players were older than me. Now I'm like this bully, and I got to watch what I say.
You're picking on the kids, Grant.
Yeah. Can you imagine Justin Smith getting upset by what I said?
God, there was one guy on those teams I would not want to tick off. I think Justin Smith would probably be number one on the list.
Yeah. He'd find a way to kill me somehow.
What was that party where he like lit somebody's furniture on fire?
I don't know that story.
Allegedly. Yeah. There's a crazy story. I think he's told the story where like he either lit somebody's furniture on fire or threw it in a pool. I don't know. He destroyed somebody's furniture. Anyway,
sounds like a good party.
I wouldn't mess with Justin Smith. It's not a good party in San Francisco right now, Grant. Things are not good at all by any stretch of the imagination. They lost that game to the Rams on Sunday. I called it the worst regular season loss of the Shanahan era, even worse than getting spanked by Colt McCoy and the Cardinals. Cause like you lost that game. Okay. But this was worse because not only were they beat up and battered, but you had the game and you failed on multiple levels to lose that game. It was way harder to lose that game than to win it at one point, and the 49ers didn't win it.
Yeah, and that loss to Colt McCoy and the Cardinals a few years ago, I feel like I could be wrong, but I think they went on a run after that. Like that was sort of the wake-up call. They played very well after that. I mean, is that what's going to happen right now? Is this the wake-up call the 49ers needed, or is this sort of a sign that things are worse than we realized? Because we were just sort of looking at like, well, you know, the Niners have injuries. They're not quite themselves right now. Well, they just lost to a team with more injuries. They just lost to a team with a worse defense. And did the Rams win or did the Niners beat themselves? Like, they were up 14-0 almost instantly. They seemed like clearly the better team. And then they just, what, lost interest? I still don't really understand how they lost that game, but I do think it's spooky that they had a 10-point lead with 6:18 left in the Super Bowl. 4 years ago, they had a 10-point lead with 6:17 left. Time is a flat circle. I'm not sure what's going on.
Thanks for linking those two things in my mind. I mean, the first words of Sean McVay's press conference were, holy shit. Literally, that's how he started his post-game press conference. Like, they didn't even expect to win. And that's the concerning thing. The concerning thing is, are the breakdowns that we saw something that's going to continue? Because as I rewatched the game and as I watched some people way smarter than me do film breakdowns, the thing that concerned me is the Rams basically just went back to the well. They kept doing the same things over and over again at big spots in the game because it kept working. And we saw it. One of the things they did was trip wide receivers bunched up on one side of the formation, which has been an issue for the Niners all year. The Vikings exploited that consistently against San Francisco. The Rams did the exact same thing, ran the exact same concept, and it worked both times to perfection. That was on offense. And on defense, it was the same thing where Matt Stafford got down, audibled in the red zone to runs. They worked every time to the point where Stafford is handing the ball off and throwing his hands up into the air before the running back has even finished the play because he knows it's going to work for a touchdown. That's the concerning thing to me. Are these repeated issues something that can get fixed, or is it just going to be, hey, they're poorly coached and they can't fix it all year long?
Well, can they get fixed? That would be by whom? The coaches, Nick Sorensen, Brandon Staley. And so maybe they need to fix it right now. Maybe D'Amico Ryans could fix them or Steve Wilks could fix them, but it seems like you got a rookie defensive coordinator who's never done this before. He's got elevated because the players like him and because he knows Pete Carroll's scheme, which is totally out of fashion, but the Niners like it still. And why else is he the off? And they bring in Brandon Staley too, because this guy isn't experienced, and Brandon Staley, like, just coming off having a terrible defense with the Chargers. He had a good defense one time with the Rams a long time ago, had some bad defenses with the Chargers, got fired. And now, surprise, surprise, these two guys, the brain trust that is Brandon Staley and Nick Sorensen, isn't getting it done. Like, that decision, firing Wilkes and replacing him with these two guys, is what could, you know, it's what has the season on the brink of disaster right now.
If you want something positive, if you want a reason for optimism, I saw this tweet. I liked it from Johnny Dells, who does an excellent job on film breakdowns, by the way. He did a great one this week. But Johnny points out that D'Amico Ryan's points per game allowed in his first 8 games as the DC for the Niners. I'll just read them if you're not watching the stream. 33, 11, 30, 28, 17, 30, 22, 31. And as Johnny writes, people forget the theme during that time was Ryan's ain't it. So, we know what D'Amico Ryans ended up becoming as a defensive coordinator. Not saying that Nick Sorensen could be that, but maybe we are too quick to throw him under the bus.
Sure, maybe. I mean, obviously, it's just week 3, but the fact that they gave up 27 points to an offense that didn't have 2 starting wide receivers, 2 starting offensive linemen is like, that was kind of hard to fathom, especially when you look at what the Cardinals did against this team the week before. The Cardinals don't have a good defense. And they held the Rams to like 3 points for most of the game. The Rams are decimated. The Rams are one of the worst teams in the league. And for them to score 27 points, I thought they would score 13 going into the game. I mean, 27? How? Because there was like a 50-yard pass interference penalty and then a 40-yard pass interference penalty. It's just like just the worst football from the 49ers, a team that's supposed to be the best.
The concerning deep plays. You know, you listen to Stafford and McVay coming out of this game. I like to listen to the other team after the game, as painful as it is after losses, because it gives you some insight into what they were thinking and how they wanted to attack the 49ers. And McVay has said this, and Stafford has said this. Their whole mentality was just don't get blown out. Just stay in the game was really what they kept saying. Keep fighting, stay in the game. Like, they didn't really think that they were going to win. And I think the key possession was the third possession of the game. Niners go up by 14. They stop the Rams. They get the ball back. They have a chance to put the game in a headlock. Go up 3 scores in the first quarter or early second quarter, whatever it was. And Brandon Ayuk couldn't haul in that pass on third down and the drive stalled. I thought that was really the first time the 49ers opened the door. Because if they go up by three scores that early in the game, I think you take the Rams' heart right out of them.
Also, I think it's interesting that McVay said the strategy would just stay in the game. Because if you know the Niners, you know their issue is finishing, closing. A lot of times they'll get an early lead on you and then just cruise in the second half to an easy victory. But if you make it tight, if you make it so Kyle Shanahan has to like manage the clock and make decisions under pressure that are like beyond his script, you got a chance. There's a track record of him sort of messing that stuff up. And I think this was another example of it. I mean, the Ronnie Bell decision, a lot of things that happened in this game were strange. So you give yourself a chance if it's close, and close is down 10 with 6 minutes left. That's close enough.
There were so many failings in that game. It was just a comedy of, they always did the thing where you're like, well, as long as they don't do this, they're going to be fine. And then they would immediately do that thing, right? Oh, they're up by multiple scores. Well, as long as they don't give up a deep chunk play by the Rams, first pass, 50 yards, 2-2 Atwell down the field. It was like, damn it. Don't you know? Like, don't do the thing.
Don't do the thing. But I mean, it's like, not to make excuses for Chavarius Ward, but it's like he missed a day of practice. You put him on the injury report. The Rams know that he has a messed up hamstring. They're going to go after that with their fastest player. You might want to be prepared for that and give him some safety help. But I look, maybe Nick Sorensen is great and he's the next to D'Amico Ryans, but so far him and Brandon Staley seem like they're really struggling. Because right now the defense is doing nothing well. I don't think you could say that about D'Amico's defenses. They gave up some points in some games to some really good quarterbacks. But, I mean, this defense is doing nothing well right now. That's what Dante Whitner said. I agree.
I mean, if it's not Bosa or Fred Warner being superhuman, I agree. They are not doing anything really well right now. King Joser says, two questions to ask Kyle. One, how many games are in jeopardy until a change in special teams comes? And two, why are growing pains from rookie mistakes more egregious than lower floor vets? Excuse me. Please, Grant. I want to address the first thing, like, the special teams have never been good under Shanahan ever, and they fired Richard Hightower, or they let Richard Hightower go, whatever. They bring in Brian Schneider. Okay, great, you made a change. They're bad. They're bad with Schneider, Grant. They were bad on punt coverage, not just on the long return. There were other punts in the game where guys stopped blocking before the ball is even punted. They stop blocking, and they start running down the field. That's not how it's supposed to work. Like, fundamentally, this special teams is not good. And you can tell that Kyle has no confidence in it. Because when's the last time they let a kickoff land outside of the end zone? They haven't done it at all. Because Kyle's like, screw it. We're not taking the risk. The special teams has been awful forever. And it needs, something has to change. Because it's just been too often a weakness.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Schneider was the special teams coordinator for the Seahawks for a long time. But then he just like walked away from the job for personal reasons a few years ago. And then popped up on Urban Meyer's staff in Jacksonville, and then stepped away again for personal reasons. And then now he's here. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe he's not the best special teams coordinator that they could get. I don't know why he stepped away, but it seems like that's a huge issue. Absolutely. Then the next question, like, yeah, like John Lynch says they're going to play Jacob Cowing. Might get some opportunities. Then they don't. And then Kyle Shanahan on the conference call is like, well, he's not ready. He hasn't earned it. It's like, oh, but Ronnie Bell has? Are you kidding? What are you talking about?
That was the weirdest thing. Like, what is Ronnie Bell? Last time we saw him, he was the punt returner last year. He's fumbling the ball every other time he got a kick to him.
Right. So it almost feels like Kyle Shanahan is basing his playing time on like written tests in meetings, which is kind of silly. I mean, what are we evaluating on? Like, it's supposed to be what they can do in a game. And we've seen Ronnie Bell kind of like be overwhelmed by the moment consistently, whether it's preseason or regular season or whatever. And Jacob Cowing, I mean, he did muff a punt, but in the preseason, he was like their best receiver. So maybe give him a look, because it couldn't be worse than Ronnie Bell.
Wait, is that a thing that they're doing? Written tests and meetings?
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, in what world is Ronnie Bell above Jacob Cowing on the depth chart? Like, just because he can like spit out plays quicker. Like, if you just were to call the play, Ronnie Bell could like visualize it in his mind faster. Like, that's cool. That's one part of football, but you got to put the best players on the field, man. And I feel like Kyle Shanahan hasn't been doing that consistently enough.
Even in that spot too, like I heard some people, you know, Jason Aponte mentioned this on Bully Ball, our show on Tuesdays, where he said, you know, even if you say that Ronnie Bell's out there because he's a better run blocker, okay. But at that spot with a minute left in the game, you're not running the ball. So you don't need Ronnie Bell out there. You need the guy that could catch the damn thing. And for all the crap that went on in that game and all the poor play and everything, if Ronnie Bell makes that catch, the game's over. The game is right. over because the Rams have one timeout. There just wasn't enough time left. And to not have him on the field for Ronnie freaking Bell, who's done nothing, who probably wouldn't even be on another NFL roster, is mind-boggling.
Here's the way I look at it. The Niners have had a lot of examples of players who were like seemingly buried on the depth chart with no upside. They get an opportunity to start and they kill it. They're great. And Ronnie Bell isn't that guy. Okay. Brock Purdy was that guy. Juwan Jennings was that guy. Jordan Mason was that guy. Guys, you're like, man, they're probably third stringers at best. And they start and you're like, no, they're good starters. These are top level players. It ain't Ronnie Bell. It might be Jacob Cowing. Put him out there for two snaps. Throw him two passes. We'll see what it looks like because you don't have the best track record of like projecting this from practice. We want to see.
That's the weird thing. It's just like, you know what Ronnie Bell is. You're telling me that you think there's a chance Jacob Cowing is so bad he's worse than that. I find that hard to believe. And again, I know we're basing it on a very limited preseason window, and I get that. But damn, man, I just don't think he could be worse. And this is what Bell has done consistently. Drop the ball. He was known for it at Michigan, too. Like, this is not a new thing. You can't be shocked that Ronnie Bell didn't hang on to the football. He had a terrible drop earlier in the day.
This feels like Jordan Mason all over again. It's like, yeah, you're probably good enough to be on the field, but you haven't memorized my offense yet. And I'm not just going to create the precedent that you can just get on the field because you're good at football. Like, you have to do the process that all the other players did. And when you finally have this down, backwards in front, then we can talk about putting you on the field. I mean, I feel like that's what he did with Jordan Mason. He didn't know his assignments. It's like, I don't know. Like, you put him on the field anyway. He was playing the last couple, not a lot, but you put him on the field. He played well. It just feels like revisionist history. And then when you had to play him, all of a sudden, oh, he's ready and he's great still. Like, I don't know. Instead of making excuses, just put Jacob Cowing on the field. You're a great coach, Kyle. You're a great one. I think you can figure out a package of plays that he can handle, and it just might make your offense a lot better.
Or at least tell us why. Educate us, right? Like, that's where I always come at it from. Like, look, you know way more about football than I'll ever know, Kyle Shanahan. But just explain. And what I mean by that is Jennifer on the conference call was asking follow-up questions about Jacob Cowing and why he's not on the field. And she said, is it more a mental understanding of the offense and where he needs to be? And Kyle said, there's a lot of reasons that go into it, but he hasn't been able to make his way into that group yet. Okay, great. You have your reasons. That's fine. What are those reasons? Please explain it to us. Because as fans, we are sitting here saying, this doesn't make any sense. So I would like to know from Kyle Shanahan, like, what are those reasons specifically? Because damn, man, like, Ronnie Bell, come on.
Because it's like, look, if Jacob Cowing really is just like, has no clue of the playbook or what he's doing, he's just freelancing out there, then Chris Conley is the guy you go to. Conley is the guy you go to. Ronnie Bell is not the guy.
That's the
Chris
thing.
Conley would have caught that pass.
And they like Conley, right? Yeah. So yeah, that's just, and I didn't like any of his answers in that scenario.
Like that's the issue. Like, we can't necessarily tell Kyle he's wrong about Cowing because we're not at practice or in the meetings and there may be things we don't know, but we can for sure 100% tell him that he's wrong about Ronnie Bell.
Right.
Like, I like Ronnie Bell too on the practice squad, like maybe one day, but he ain't ready. Whatever, I don't care what he's doing in practice or the meetings.
Crippling drop. Crippling drop. And if the 49ers are fighting for a playoff spot, losing this game could, I mean, it could very well come back to haunt them, which is...
I think in the new Kyle Williams position, same jersey number. If the Niners fall short, if they don't make the playoffs, if they're one game back, whatever, it's like, Ronnie Bell!
Number 10 comes back to screw this franchise. Well, let me just... Yeah. Throw that out there. Now, there's one thing we haven't talked about yet, and we should obviously mention it because it's the biggest thing. We don't know if Brock Purdy is practicing today. Kyle Shanahan said earlier he was hopeful that Brock could play. The MRI reportedly came back, and it was good, was the word Kyle used. Well, let's be honest. Kyle Shanahan's track record of talking about injuries is not exactly spotless, so we got to wait and see. And if he can't practice, and you got to play a game against the Patriots with your backup quarterback there, gulp, Grant, because this is a big game for the 49ers. You win this game, you're 2-2, you're right in the thick of it of the NFC, you're okay. You're okay. You lose this game, and you go 1-3, and the Seahawks potentially go to 4-0, And now you're in it. Like, you're in the weeds in a major way a quarter of the way through the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know what Niners going to do. We got Brock Purdy, and they say it's just let's decode Kyle. Let's decode Kyle, because he says he's hopeful he's going to practice. If he thinks he's going to practice, he says stuff like, he's good to go. He's good to go. So when he says, I hope he's going to practice, that means he may not be good to go.
Right.
Like, that's all we really know right now. And when he says he's day-to-day, that means that he's currently too sore / injured / whatever you want to call it to practice. So maybe things have changed in the last 48 hours. Possible. But we're going to have to find out in like 3 hours. Kyle will talk at 12:40. I guess he'll have to say the injuries before practice. And then we'll see it with our own eyes. But we don't even know like when this happened. I guess we did a bad job. Did we ask that in the conference call? Like, when did this particularly happen? I don't know. Maybe not.
No.
Maybe not. We suck.
I think it caught everybody by surprise, too.
It was like a 30-second pause. No one said anything after he said it. It was crazy.
Yeah. So that was one of the things that I looked at. I'm looking at the conference call, and I'm like, okay, he just drops this thing that nobody on the call was prepared for because we had no indication. And then nobody said anything. I actually checked. It was 24 seconds of silence.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, and like when he told us about Christian McCaffrey's calf, it was like, oh, by the way, Christian Strange's calf, he's going to be out for a while, but he's fine. And they're like, oh, it's no big deal. And then it's like, oh, that's a big deal. And same thing with Debo, like last week's, Strange's calf, it's fine. It's like, I guess, I don't know. I mean, you say it's fine, but we'll see when he comes back. Same with Kittle. Like, is Kittle fine? They've downplayed it, but who knows? He could be 3 weeks.
The McCaffrey thing. I heard McCaffrey, the injury described, Mike Silver was on with, I think, Rich Eisen, and he, to me, described it the perfect way. He called it a Hail Mary. I don't know this, and Mike was very careful to say, you know, he's not a doctor and all that stuff, but damn, this to me feels like, well, if I got to get season-ending surgery, I might as well go to Germany to try to get this thing. Maybe that'll avoid, like, you don't do this if things are going well. You don't take an international trip in the middle of the football season if all is well with your Achilles and Christian McCaffrey.
No, I mean, it makes you wonder, like, has he partially ruptured this already? Or how scared is he that he's going to rupture it if he does anything else? And it's like, this is what's crazy, too, is like, let's say this works. This thing from Germany works, and he finally starts feeling better. Like, how long will it last? How long can he practice day in, day out, playing like he did last year, before it pops up and it's an issue again? Like, this to me, is this going to affect the rest of his career? Is this the beginning of the end of Christian McCaffrey? Because once your body starts to go, like, there's no, I don't know. It doesn't look good, man. I wouldn't expect him to play this season.
Not great, Bob. I mean,
no.
Yeah, I would not be shocked at all if he doesn't play this season. It's a very scary thing. Apparently, the Achilles, too, I guess it doesn't get a lot of blood flow, which is why it takes so long to heal, because that's what helps your body heal is blood flow. And it's just one of the areas of the body that doesn't get a ton. So it's just a very difficult thing to have to deal with. And, you know, I was listening a little bit to the Tim Kawakami, Matt Barrows podcast, and they had a good point, too, which is like, all right, take Christian McCaffrey out of it. What if Jordan Mason gets hurt? Then you're down to Isaac Rendo and Patrick Taylor at running back. And it's like, whew,
season is on thin ice right now. Like, they're walking a tightrope, and they're 1-2. It's not like they're walking it particularly well. They have the same freaking record as the Giants and the Cowboys. They're like, they're in that. And now we assume they're going to beat the Patriots. I mean, really, they have the talent to destroy the Jets just destroyed the Patriots. The Niners destroyed the Jets. The Niners should be able to handle business right now, but they just lost to the Rams, so who the hell knows?
Yeah, honestly, with the way the 49ers lost the game against the Rams, I don't look at any game on the schedule for the rest of the year as, oh, the Niners should easily win. I look at it as, please get a win so that we can, you know, survive and advance in this thing. Because if you're turning the ball over like Brock did before the half, if you are just defensively incapable of adjusting to what other teams have done to you in a game and had success doing, you can lose to anybody because the other team's got coaches and players too, right? Like, they're scheming up all week to try and beat you. So I don't look at it as, the 49ers should win. I look at it as, stop playing with your food, handle your business, and let's go.
All right, let me tell you what makes the Patriots not scary, but like a formidable NFL team. All right, so they've played three games and they've won one. They beat the Bengals. They lost this last week to the Jets. They lost 24-3 right there. You're writing them off like, man, you can't score more than 3 points in the Jets. Forget it. It was a Thursday game, so maybe it's a little weird. Look at the other two games. They went to overtime with the Seahawks, and in that game, the Patriots rushed for 185 yards and gave up 46 yards on the ground. In the previous game, when they beat the Bengals, they rushed for 170 yards and gave up 70 yards on the ground. Mm-hmm. So obviously, Jacoby Brissett, like their wide receivers, I don't even know who they are. They're not a high-flying offense, but they can stop the run. They can run the ball. And if you can do that with the Niners, you can keep it a game if you don't turn the ball over. So we'll see. And if the Niners are going to lose to freaking Sam Darnold, then all bets are off on which quarterbacks can like pose a threat. I'm sorry, I'm still not sold on Sam Darnold. They're doing a good job with him, though.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not sold on Darnold, but I agree with you. Patriots are going to run the ball, and they ain't going to stop running the ball either. And the 49ers, I thought the 49ers actually did a decent job against the Rams stopping the run, but because the Rams kept getting chunk yardage and they were able to move the ball down the field, they didn't have to give up on it. And the Niners never put them away either. But the actual yards on the ground, situationally, the Rams had some success, but for the most part, it was okay, but you never took it away from them. And the Patriots are going to be an even tougher team to stop on the ground. Ramondre Stevenson breaks a ton of tackles. It's not going to be easy. It's not.
They also have Antonio Gibson, who was with Washington for the last few years and is a very tough runner and a good receiver as well. They got two guys as opposed to that's what's tough for the Niners. Like if you're in that kind of a game and a team has two running backs that they can rotate and keep fresh, the Niners have Jordan Mason and Isaac Garendo. Who, what do you think of Isaac Garendo so far?
I like to see a little more of him. Yeah. I will say this. He's not, he doesn't fit into that break the first tackle and gain more yards type of guy. Like Jordan Mason is a sledgehammer. He's gained most of his yards after contact. Garendo, that first guy really slows him down. He's not really that. He's a different type of runner.
Yeah. He's supposed to have breakaway speed, but I haven't seen him like have the vision to like be able to use the breakaway speed. So we'll see, but I think the Niners are in a tough spot right now. Like you said, if Mason sprains an ankle, anything, the Niners are in such a tough spot. Now, they do have a really good quarterback and a really good wide receiver and another wide receiver who gets a lot of money and is good sometimes. So they can still beat the Patriots. But yeah, I mean, God, so much depends on Mason.
And that is something that does give me a little bit of hope, is that I think Brock Purdy is playing even better than he did last year. When I watched that game again, Grant, I thought Brock Purdy was phenomenal. He was dealing with an offensive line that was not doing him any favors whatsoever. He was rolling out. He was scrambling for yards. I think as the weeks go by, you see him gain more and more confidence in using his legs. He doesn't take big hits. When he does, he protects himself. I am really, really impressed with Brock Purdy, and he is already having to shoulder more of a load than he has in years past. And he has shown so far that he has been up to it.
I'm impressed with Purdy too. We can come back to him in a minute. I just want to talk about Mason. I want to finish him up with him for a second. He runs so hard. They use him so much. 28 carries week one, 20 week two, 19 week three. I think it's interesting. Like his efficiency is going down as the season goes on. Week one, 5.3 yards per attempt. Week two, 5 yards per attempt. Week three, 4.1. Now, maybe losing George Kittle goes into that, but it seems like the way he runs, he's probably sore today. He's probably sore most of the time, and they can wear him down just like they wore down Christian McCaffrey. So even if he's not hurt, his effectiveness could become compromised. And I mean, the Rams have no run defense, and they did a good job against him.
I think it's why we saw Garendo get the 5 carries that he ended up getting. I think they were trying to mix him in a little more. How about Brock Purdy? 10 carries against the Rams. Now, some of those were scrambles. It's not like he's getting design runs, but, you know,
I like a scramble. Yeah, I mean, Steve Young scramble. They weren't calling zone reads for him. I think that's a big part of Brock Purdy's game, man. Like, especially while you only have one healthy running back, you need to take those scramble lanes because he's fast. And those are big. Those are often first downs for the offense. I thought that was a big difference between week two and week three.
I love that from Brock. Please, Brock, keep doing that. Like, it is a tool in your tool belt. He's good at it. That one third down where he drops back to pass and he breaks a tackle running to his left and the guy is there and he gives him that little pump fake just to get the guy to hesitate for a second, goes right around the edge, dives forward for the first down. Dude, if Mahomes made that play, it'd be leading Sports Center. If Lamar Jackson made that play, Brock does it and nobody even notices except for all of us 49er fans on Twitter who are tweeting the play out there. That's an elite play from Brock Purdy.
What sucks is that he has a back injury now. We don't know how he got it. Was it from diving?
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Was it from the quarterback sneak? Was it from getting hit in the pocket because Colton Kivis can't block anyone? I would love to know when and how, why, like what's going on with him. But yeah, I think the scrambling is what's going to take him from very good quarterback to potentially elite, because I don't think any quarterback anymore can just stand still like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady and be the best. And you got to run around. That's what Mahomes does. What Stroud does. It's what Purdy does. So he needs. I don't think it's what Kyle wants. But I think it's what he needs. It's what every coach needs.
You have to have it, I feel like. Yeah. In today's NFL, you need to have that, just an extra tool. You don't need, it's not something you got to do all the time, but when stuff happens, it's nice to know that it's there. And clearly, Brock has shown that it is there. So, the Niners are going through this rough patch. More is asked of your quarterback. And so far, that has to be at least one good storyline of the season, is that Brock Purdy seems to be living up to it right now.
Him and Juwan. I mean, yes. My goodness. Like, Juwan, there were flashes of this. I feel like you saw it in the Super Bowl, and I kind of mentioned it throughout the offseason. Like, man, what if he got, like, a bigger role in the offense? I mean, could he handle it, or is this the only way that he's effective? Could he be a number two receiver, even though he's just a slot guy? And now I just think you're starting to be like, man, this guy could be a number one receiver, even though he's just a slot guy, kind of like Rashee Rice in Kansas City. And maybe he's not, but he's as hot as any receiver in the league right now. He's hot. And it's a lot of fun to watch him. It's a lot of fun to watch a guy 27 years old take his game up like this. It's cool. No one saw it coming. Maybe he did.
I don't think that he's a number one wide receiver, but I also don't think that anyone could have done this just because, well, other guys were out. Like, there are a lot of guys in the NFL that just don't have this kind of game in them. Like Juwan Jennings had. He caught passes over the middle. He caught contested passes. He caught passes deep down the sideline, outside the numbers. He was everywhere for the 49ers.
It didn't feel like a fluke to me. I'm sorry.
I think
maybe it's because Darius Williams is out, but I guess we'll see, man. He made some of the that deep pass when he caught over that guy's back was like one of the most impressive catches I've ever seen.
It hit the defender's arm before Jennings even touched it. And
that could have been a pick. And Juwan is like, no, it's a great play. Thank you for throwing it to me. Great decision.
11 for 175 and three touchdowns. First 49ers receiver with three touchdowns in a game since Terrell Owens in 2001. It had been almost
11 for 175. What's the average on that? Like, he's a downfield threat running a 4.7.
That third down call where he caught his third touchdown, I thought was such a brilliant call by Kyle, because they have gone to that quick little out so many times on third down with Juwan Jennings, and it always works. And this time they did the out and up, and it totally completely took the Rams by surprise, and it was a perfect throw by Brock Purdy.
It just seems like you can't really stop Juwan Jennings. Like, if he has a two-way go on third down, and he could go in or out depending on the leverage, or you can call a double move off of that, like, good freaking luck. Because even if you do have good coverage on Juwan Jennings, he's 6'3 and makes incredible catches. Like, he has a lot of Anquan Boldin in his game.
Yes.
I mean, Anquan Boldin wasn't running. He probably ran a 4.7. It didn't freaking matter. Why do you think he can't be a number one option?
I don't think he's fast enough. I don't think he's fast. I think, like, to truly be like a number one,
15 yards a catch.
I don't think he can threaten the defense from all areas. And this doesn't, like, I'm not trying to slight Juwan Jennings. I'm just saying, I don't think he's like a number one guy where, like, other teams are going to have to double him. I think he took advantage of the fact that Ayuk got a lot of attention and that Kyle's a really good play caller. Like, his first touchdown, that was
dope. Yeah, he was wide open.
No one's within like 10 yards of him, and he's in the end zone.
Yes.
And that's not a slight to Juwan. Like, I think he's shown he probably deserves some more targets. What did he have, like 19 catches last year? Like, maybe we can get Juwan Jennings some more targets. But I don't know that he's.
I feel like he's an elite route runner, an elite competitor. Definitely not. He's definitely like the slowest wide receiver in the league. But I think he plays faster than 4.7, which is evidenced by him, averaging 15 yards a catch, probably more than that in his last game. Like, he makes plays down the field on those deep crossing routes. I'm a fan. I want to get his autograph. I'm gonna name my firstborn Juwan Cohn.
I do wonder if this 49ers offense, it's hard to tell because they have so many injuries. So I don't know if it's like a shift in the philosophy or it's just a thing that has happened because of everybody being out. But you know, the Niners are basically like last or second to last, I believe, in yards after catch so far this season, which is crazy because they always lead the league in yards after catch with Kyle Shanahan. What I don't know is, are they just adapting because of who's there or not there? Or is it to the point where defenses have been getting killed so much on these crossers over the middle and guys running after the catch that they have finally figured out how to crack it? And so Kyle's adjustment to that is throwing the ball deeper down the field where it's much more difficult to get yards after catch. I don't know.
Well, look, I mean, McCaffrey's out. He's a big yak guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two yak guys are Kittle and Debo. And they've only played two games. Maybe it's a small sample size.
Yep.
But Debo Samuel's a guy who in his prime would average 8, 9, 10 yards after the catch per reception. Now this year he's at 4.2. So is that defense is catching up, Kyle not doing something wrong, or Debo getting old? And then Kittle 4.9. Maybe it's just a small sample size, but maybe it's these guys getting old. I mean, is Debo really going to be the Hulk and break tackles forever? Like, eventually he won't.
Matthew Rowley says, regarding cowing, what if he runs the wrong routes regularly? Wouldn't that make Brock's best trait, anticipation, a liability, and lead to picks? Potentially, yeah. But it also doesn't do you any good to run the right route and have the ball clang off your hands.
I got a stat, too. Sorry, I'm just looking at Pro Football Reference. Maybe take it with a grain of salt. I'm not saying it's... I mean, it's Pro Football Reference. They have broken tackles. Debo Samuel this year, 1. George Kittle, 0. So Ayuk has 1. Like, they have the Niners breaking 2 tackles this year. So maybe it's just the freaking team. Maybe it's the players. I don't know what's going on with this team, but they don't seem like it's their usual hungry. That looked like a Super Bowl hangover stat right there. 2 broken tackles through 3 games. Wow. The Niners.
Like I said, I don't know what it is, or if it's a small sample. Like, I'm not agreeing with you or disagreeing with you. It's concerning. Like, usually they do break more tackles.
I don't know. Maybe that's just a conservative stat from Pro Football Reference and it's wrong. I don't know. It's a free website. You can look it up.
We need more information, but I think clearly the offense is not the problem for this team.
It's not. Like, okay, so they're getting air yards instead.
Right. Like,
okay, who cares?
They're still moving the ball. They're still... No, they got to get...
If Juwan Jennings is your number one target, you won't get a lot of yak, but you'll get contested catches and whatever. Like, it'll even out.
They got to get a little better in the red zone. They still really haven't, and that's where they miss Christian a lot. So that's one area where they definitely could be better, because Jake Moody, I mean, the first game, he had 6 field goals. Like, that's not being locked in the red zone.
Yeah, but going to Juwan in the red zone seemed to work in this last game. Maybe keep doing that.
Jimmy Kwan says Jennings is elite because he does not give up on the play. He plays until the sound of the whistle, whether that's blocking or running routes or anything like that.
Me and Jimmy Kwan are both stands. Juwan stands.
You're a Juwan stan?
Yes. Guy's the truth.
The real
issue. He's going to have an incredible season, man. He's just getting started. I'm so excited to watch him play football.
The real issue is the defense. The defense has to be better. It has to be fixed. It has to be adjusted. They're not getting any pass rush from the defensive line. Leonard Floyd has one pressure in the last two games. Like, what?
What?
One pressure in the last two games? Like, damn, man. And he's only playing like half the snaps, too.
Poor and Nick Hargrave just went down for the season. So, the pass rush is a problem. It's really not that good. And the way I look at it is, okay, so you're not getting pressure with a four-man pass rush. Now you got to rush five. It's not acceptable to be the team with the lowest pressure, the lowest blitz rate, and have low pressure rates. Like, if you're not getting pressure with four, you bring five. If you're not bringing pressure with five, you bring six. Because you can't just let the Sam Darnolds of the world hang back there and dice you up, which is what you're doing. So the pressure's on Nick, man. Like, you're not generating pressure with four. Let's see what your five-man pressures look like. And if they're no good, then we know it's on you, buddy. Now's the time for you and Brandon to show something creative.
That's what I want to see. Because it almost looks like, in a weird way, you either don't recognize what's happening or you're like not trying to fix it. You know, like, blitz more. You will have to. 2 weeks.
But wasn't that one of the things that the players didn't like about Wilkes, right? Nick Bosa would come out after the game like, well, we're kind of more of a four-man rush team. He said that.
I don't care.
And Nick Lawrence is the coach because Nick Bosa didn't like Wilkes, or I don't know.
Then what I would say to Nick Bosa's face is, well, then be better at your job.
Play better. Play better, Nick.
Guys up front have to be better. You've been terrible. The past 2 weeks, they've played quarterbacks that, as good as Matthew Stafford is, and to me, he's the best quarterback in the NFC. Stafford in his career and Sam Darnold definitely in his career have shown when you make them uncomfortable, they will give you chances to take the football away. They will put the football in harm's way. And the problem was the 49ers never made Sam Darnold uncomfortable and they never made Matthew Stafford uncomfortable. Go look at some of those deep passes. Brian Baldinger had a breakdown of this. He does like his Twitter film breakdowns. They're very cool. Some of those deep passes, there's nobody even close to pressuring Matthew Stafford. Not even close. And that's the thing that has to change. That's why you have to bring blitzers. You have to. Because if you don't make quarterbacks uncomfortable, I don't care who you're playing, you could lose. They could move the ball down the field on you.
Yeah. It really felt like last year. Remember when Kirk Cousins just destroyed the Niners and then Joe Burrow did it the next week, almost never missed? That's kind of what the Niners defense feels like right now. Like, they've regressed back to that. And, you know, when that happened, they like made trades and they moved Steve Wilkes from the booth to the field. Is it time to move Nick Sorensen from the field back to the booth or something? I mean, he's got to be moved.
Because that fixes precedent. Everything. Yeah, like, that fixes it all. Just
he can't. They got to put him in a new place.
Chris V says, Brock does better with big body receivers. Does Kyle not notice that? I feel like Brock's best games have been when he throws to big dogs.
I mean, who was his wide receiver, his go-to guy at Iowa State? Was it like Hakeem Butler? He's like 6'5". I don't know. It does seem like he really trusts Juwan Jennings. And if you're going to be throwing all these passes over the middle, it's nice to throw them to a 6'3" dog who will go up and get it, as opposed to Tebow and Ayuk, who aren't necessarily money in contested catch situations.
I do agree that he clearly has a trust with Jennings. Like, it, to me, it's obvious. Like, that deep ball he threw where Jennings mossed the guy, like, he just threw it up there and said, it might not be complete, but I know Jennings is not going to let this thing get intercepted.
Yeah. And they did the same thing with Ronnie Bell.
God, that Ronnie Bell. I mean, think about those two catches, right? Just think of those two back-to-back. The catch
seven-round picks
Jennings made was so difficult and incredible. And then Ronnie Bell has the complete opposite of that, where both corners run themselves out of the play, and it's just you and the ball. He didn't even get hit afterwards. It's not even like, well, if he caught it, you know, he was going to take a big shot. No, they were out of position.
Yeah.
And just clang.
And think about Ronnie Bell, like, he's faster than Jennings, more explosive than Jennings, more versatile than Jennings, can do a lot of gadget stuff. Was a seventh round pick like Jennings. I mean, he's in a fraction of the player that Jennings is. He wasn't in college and he isn't now.
Official B&A Music 88 says, Richie James had 184 versus Green Bay in 2020. Got to see more from JJ before we crown him. That was still the USFL Rams, a.k.a. steak in a garbage. Can we talk about that?
Dude, we saw Juwan Jennings be the Super Bowl MVP just a few months ago, man. Like, he was great in that game. To me, this is not a fluke. He's been doing this since the Philly game last year.
Well, the Philly game last year was Debo.
He had a touchdown in the game. Am I wrong? Maybe I'm wrong. I thought he had a touchdown.
He might have had a touchdown. Yeah. I don't know the specifics. But when
he'd
I think
hurt, you came back. I thought he started playing well then.
The garbage can and a steak is a reference to this tweet from Diamador Lenore. The Rams trolled the 49ers by showing the win probability. And then Lenore quote tweeted it and said, "A garbage can get a steak every now and again. Hashtag Patriots on the clock." I love Lenore and I love that he talks trash. But dude, first of all, if the Patriots are on the clock, then why are you still talking about the Rams? Like, get over it. Also, you lost. They could say whatever they want, man. You lost, and you lost in horrifying fashion.
It's a bad look. It's a bad look, but I will say that Lenore right now seems like the only guy on the team who cares. I hate to say that, but there's so many players on this team who have gotten paid and are in, and this guy is like very passionate. He played well in this game. He didn't give up any catches, and I don't know. He's talking trash. He probably shouldn't have said this, but at the same time, like, you need more players on the Niners to like kick it into gear right now, like Lenore. He's going to get paid a lot of money next year, and I don't know if the Niners can afford him. And if they can't afford him, it's because they decided to keep Brandon Ayuk, who right now I'm not sure that they necessarily needed to keep.
Certain guys give this team juice. Debo, when he makes a big play. Kittle, when he makes a big play. There's just...
Lenore.
I don't know how to explain it, but certain guys have more of that. Lenore has a little of that swag on the defense for the 49ers. Bosa doesn't. And it doesn't mean that Bosa's not a great player. It's just a weird thing. I don't know what it is, but there are
He's doing the thing his brother did. He's doing the thing his brother did. All of a sudden, you just kind of like fade into like not mediocrity, but like just being one of the good players. It's like, what? What happened, man? We gave you all the money. It's like, yeah, you know, his brother did the same thing. He's good. Joey's good, but he's not the best. And he's hurt a lot. Nick's not hurt.
Nick is a good pass rusher, but he doesn't win quickly. He doesn't immediately get in the backfield and blow up the play and take the quarterback down. It's going to take him a second to get there, which is not the worst thing in the world. And he's a relentless player. He has a high motor and he's very technically sound. But when the other guys are not doing their job and the secondary is not doing their job, Bosa can't help. That's like minimizing his skills. The other guys around him need to pick it up, man. And the loss of Hargrave is significant in the middle of that line. Leonard Floyd has to be better. Like, dude, just be the guy you've always been. Just don't disappear the way he has disappeared the last 2 weeks.
Didn't we go through this with Wilkes last year? He was playing soft zone coverage. It was negating the pass rush. They had the bye week. He figured out, okay, I'm going to put Charvarius Ward on the number one receiver. We're going to play more man. We're going to try to make the quarterback hold the ball longer so our pass rush can actually affect him. I mean, they did this last year. I don't understand what Nick Sorensen was on the staff last year, but now they're back to let's play soft zone coverage and let Nick Bosa get pressures, but no actual quarterback hits or sacks. I don't get it.
There were times where they tried to switch to man a couple of times last week. One of them was a touchdown pass to Kyren Williams.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to switch to man. That's cool. But then you have Devondre Campbell against Kyren Williams one-on-one. Guess what? The Rams are going to take that every single time. And then another couple of times, they just got hit with the crosser to Tutu Atwell over the middle, and it was just bam. Like, they've tried. That's the problem.
The problem is Yadam and Campbell are just awful in man-to-man coverage. So that's – you got to give that – that's not Sorensen's fault. But it's probably not his call on who to play either, but, like, Yadam needs to be benched and go with either Renardo Green or Rock Ya-Sin. And then Campbell needs to be benched and go with either D Winters if he's healthy or Curtis Robinson, who was good in the preseason.
That's the problem. I think they wanted to go with D Winters. They put D Winters in, and unfortunately he got hurt with the ankle.
I think he was Curtis Robinson. He was better than D Winters in the preseason.
I think you got to try something. Like, Devondre Campbell, he's not it, man. He was bad in Green Bay, and he's been bad so far this season. And I know he's
C-Rob.
I would try anybody. Just try it. What the worst thing that happens is that what has been happening continues to happen, right? Like, that's the worst thing. So you're already there. You're already in that boat. You might as well change the
why is C-Rob not the next Jordan Mason? Like, he's been on the team for a while. He knows your system. He's been one of your top special teams guys. He's not that old. He really flashed in the preseason in multiple games. Like, give him a freaking chance. I guarantee he's not worse than Devondre Campbell. If D Winters is healthy, great. But really, like, has Demetrius Flanagan Fowles been good either? Like, go with the young guys, please.
Just try it. You can always go back. It's not like baseball where once you take the guy out, you can't put him back in again. I would like to see it. And, you know, I don't really care what Kyle says in the presser. Like, I care what he actually does on Sunday, and we'll see if maybe he's reached a breaking point. I saw that Matt Maiocco had an article, and it was like three guys that, you know, maybe are in danger of losing their spot. And I feel like if Matt Maiocco's putting that out there, then maybe that's a sign that those guys are on the thin ice that we like to see as fans. Frank Tavares says, JJ, Juwan Jennings is like what Robert Horry was like for the Lakers in the early 2000s. Robert Horry has 7 rings. Can we get Juwan Jennings 7 rings, please? I'll say that. Matthew Rowley says, everyone brings up Brock's fumble. What was he supposed to do? He was in the middle of throwing and was hit. It wasn't like he was running. Dude, you got to protect the ball in the pocket, man. It was a terrible play by his offensive line, yeah, but this is 2 straight weeks where Brock has fumbled in critical spots. Yeah. And last week, he didn't even get touched when he was in the pocket and he fumbled.
He's got sweaty palms.
He's wiping his hands a lot. I noticed that.
He's got sweaty palms, man. I don't know what to say.
Maybe
he's
Jake
got to get some baby powder.
Does Jake Brendel have a sweaty ass? Maybe that's the problem.
I'll get to the bottom of that today.
Yes. Find us the, you know, who was it? Jeff Saturday or somebody. Peyton Manning used to make him take a towel and shove a towel down the back of his pants because he sweat so much and it was screwing with Peyton Manning's snaps. Like, some guys just, you know, look, it's a hard job. It's hot out there.
That was the thing with Alex Mack, too. Like, he would have, like, butt stains.
I don't envy that.
Nasty.
I have noticed Brock wiping his hands off a lot.
Ask him about that today.
Okay. Good. Ask him.
Brock, can we... do you have sweaty palms?
In terms of swamp ass, Brock, please rate Jake Brendel in the centers that you've played with. God, maybe they could use a little just humor, a little, like, levity.
Yeah, this team is under more pressure than any other team in the league. And it just seems so, it's week 4 and it's like code blue right now. Like, if they lose to the Patriots this week, oh my God. Like, the conversation would just be incredible. Hot seats and benchings and all. I mean, it'd just be the worst. You lose to the Patriots, and now it's 3 in a row. Like, forget the playoffs. I mean, it'd be like that, you know? So we all expect them to win, but we expect them to win the last 2 weeks, too. I don't know what to expect.
Yeah, and that, like, I don't want to hear any more about, you know, Talanoa Hufanga was on KMBR yesterday, and he's like, you know, we're capable of turning it around because we've done that in the past. And it's like, yeah, that's true, but, like, at some point you got to show me you're capable and not just talk about being capable. You actually have to do it at some point. And we're waiting. And like I said, if they win this week, you're okay. You're just fine. You're 2-2. You're going into a division game. You can start to chip away at the other teams in the division. You're okay if you get a win this week. But you got to go and do it. And Brock, for 2 straight weeks, has said in his post-game press conference, you know, it's got to be earned. We can't just show up and expect things to be given to us. That's a message to certain people in that locker room that apparently think the 49ers could just roll the ball out there and beat these teams. Guess what? They can't. There is no distance between them and everybody else in the NFC anymore.
I expect them to win easily. They looked so good against the Jets week 1. They played hard. Played better than the Jets. Played harder than the Jets. And they were at home. I think we've seen this Niners team, like, really feel themselves. I mean, after 1 win, 2 wins, they'll be like, well, we've proven it. Like, okay. And then you lose some games you're not supposed to lose. They lost to the Vikings. They wrote that off. You could tell. Like, oh, we were on the road. It's loud. We were missing people. We're going to beat the Rams. It's no big deal. And you lose to the Rams and you're coming home again. Like, this is, if you lose to the Patriots, they'll get booed off their home field. I fully expect them to play very, very hard. The question is, what are they going to look like when they go on the road next time? Because the teams that have, like, that have the Super Bowl hangover, or maybe they've tuned out their coach, or they're not really cohesive teams, that's when you see it on the road.
I can't believe we're here after 3 weeks. How are we here after 3 weeks? But you know what? Get a win this week.
I mean, come on. We saw it, though. No team had more drama this offseason than the Niners. It was just drama nonstop. And now there's still more drama. Germany has entered the group chat. The Germans.
How about Trent Williams gets through a game without needing an IV? Can we do that, please? Damn. Like, can we get our left tackle in shape? But you win this week against the Patriots, then maybe, and I don't know if this is going to happen, maybe Ricky Pearsall can come back because he's eligible to come back after this week. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I do think that that would be a positive shot in the arm for the club to have.
You can't use that. You can't use that metaphor when you talk about Ricky.
All right. You know, I apologize. That was a poor choice of words. You're right. I meant
he didn't think about it. He didn't think about it, though.
A positive boost. I apologize. That was not intentional.
It's okay. Hey, but can I say something really low? Like, if Ricky Pearsall gets on the field coming off a gunshot wound before Jacob Cowing, I got to know. What did Jacob do? Did he not brush his teeth? Is it halitosis? I got to know.
Didn't Jacob Cowing write them a thank you note after they, I think it was like after they visited with him at the combine or after they visited with him? He wrote a thank you note, I think, to the 49ers, because when he was drafted, Kyle said on the phone to him, like, oh, dude, it was your thank you note that made us pick you. Maybe he needs to write another one.
It's a very conscientious, mature thing to do. Clearly, he was well-raised.
You know what? Thank you notes go a long way. They quick really story. Do. When I was producing at Pro Football Talk, one of the things I used to do was, at the end of the year, anybody that had been a guest on the show, especially if they had come on multiple times, I would buy them a Starbucks gift card. And I would write them a handwritten thank you note and I would mail it to them. I got so many good responses and so much credit for those freaking thank you notes, man. People went nuts for them. Anytime I needed the person after that, they were like, yep, I'll do it for you. Anytime you want. You got me that Starbucks gift card. It was unbelievable.
You know who you never got a Starbucks gift card and a thank you note? You know who you never got that for?
Who?
Me.
You.
Me. You had me on your show at least 4 times.
No, this was only when I was at NBC.
Retro, no, with what was that guy's name? Yeah, you sort of had me on that show in like 2013.
Oh, right, with Eric Casilius.
With Eric Casilius. You owe me a Starbucks card.
You know what? You're right. You're right. I owe you a Starbucks gift card. You're right.
Damn, you're just taking me for granted. Yeah, I always said yes, but I like Starbucks too.
Are there Starbucks in California?
Yeah, I went to Starbucks this morning.
What's your order?
A small coffee. I know you aren't supposed to say small, right? It's tall.
Whatever. You just get straight up coffee.
Yeah. What do you get?
I don't drink Starbucks. I don't like it.
Okay.
I get nothing.
Okay. Here you go. I hate this place. Enjoy.
I'm picky about my coffee. I really am. Like, I don't.
You Dunkin' Donuts guy?
No, I hate Dunkin' Donuts. It's water.
Fair enough. So you're a Seattle Mariners fan. You're like a coffee purist. Like,
yes.
Like you're a West Coaster at heart. Like, you're drinking Pete's.
I do drink beef.
Hell yeah. You know what's up. Hell yeah. You want that uncut straight from Colombia. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I got the grinder. You know, you do
hell
that.
Hell yeah.
It tastes 1,000% better. With just coffee tip. You grind it yourself. It's
what is your go-to Pete's flavor?
I'm a hazelnut.
Hazelnut. I'm a Cafe Domingo kind of guy. It's a medium roast. A lot of people go French roast, but I feel like the medium roast got a little bit more kick. You know what I'm saying?
Grant Cohn, aggressively medium.
Yeah. And I like going into Pete's and asking for a medium roast. Can I get a medium? I always do that. It makes me laugh. It's not that funny though.
Does it make that medium.
No, but it makes me giggle.
All right. We've reached the end of the line here. There's almost 1,300 people watching. Thank you, everybody. If this is your first time watching a Gold Standard show, please give us a chance. Give us a like. Give us a subscribe. I promise you we will earn your time. We do 5-minute news updates every morning. We go live every weekday. We're live after every 49ers game. Please, please give us a shot. I promise you we won't let you down. Make sure you like and subscribe to the Grant Cohn YouTube channel as well. Okay, hold on.
I will let you down, though, every freaking day. That's the one thing you can count on.
BC says, Rob's not in California. There's still people that don't know this.
Connecticut.
I live in Connecticut. I'm a Niners fan. I'm a Mariners fan from Connecticut. I know I'm weird. Get over it. 2024.
Why do you think we're streaming at 9:52 on the West Coast?
we could stream at a different time.
I don't do this with anyone else. It's just Rob.
Well,
because I love him.
We love you too, Graham. All right, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Hold Kyle's feet to the fire, you and all your compadres in there. Ask him about Jacob Cowing. Tell him we demand to know.
Hey, Kyle, Grant Cohn here to question another one of your decisions. You're going to love this one. You're going to love it.
The amount of forward responses you've gotten from Kyle Shannon, it's at an all-time high this year.
Can you imagine if I had asked the Jacob Cowan question instead of Jennifer Lee Chan? I was so grateful she did it. I was like, because he won't give me an answer. At least he gave her an answer.
No, he like, and you have to be really careful in the way you word your questions too, because if you're like, why isn't Jacob Cowan on the field? Kyle would say, well, there's a lot of reasons. And then he'll go to the next question. Like, it's unreal.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to ask Kyle Shanahan how he got so good. So, Kyle, top five. Top five Lil Wayne songs. What you got? He'll love me for that.
Trust me, that question is coming at some point. But anyway, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Barney Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.